of these sounds do you recognise? Or this. Or this. Or even this. These are the sounds of Braille, a Perkins, a Dymo gun, a Braille watch opening and closing, and of course a Braille embosser. I've been using Braille now for 50 years, and to talk to me about Braille, the past, the present and the future, are Steve Nutt and Paul Leake.
Hello.
Hi.
Steve, if I could start with you first. You were at the same preschool that I was at, Sunshine House in Northwood. I don't know how well you remember that, but that's where I started my Braille journey. What are your recollections of Braille?
I went to a nursery in Hampstead before that when I was three, and that's when I started Braille because I had a very enthusiastic German lady called Mrs. Curzon.
Yes, I remember her, because I was there too.
You was there too as well,
I was, but I don't really remember much about it. I know the name and I vaguely remember something about it. But
well, I remember she was sighted and she could read Braille as quick as anyone that was blind.
Wow.
She was really good and said, you know, the earlier I learned Braille, the better I'd be at it, as it were. And so I started really learning Braille. She started me off at about three.
That's quite incredible. So you will obviously have had some knowledge of it then when you went to Northwood in Middlesex.
Yeah, and then I don't remember much about Northwood, to be honest.
Not much to remember, really.
And then when I went to Lodge, because I didn't go to Lodge until I was seven.
Right.
And there's various reasons for that, which I won't go into. But by the time I got to Lodge at seven, I had the Braille reading age of a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
So I was much faster than most of them at Lodge reading Braille. So I've always been a very fluent Braillist, always had a passion for it.
It's passionate for me as well, which is why I wanted this to talk to you both about it as very fluent Braillist. Paul, you started reading Braille when you were very young as well. What are your early memories?
Well, I had the dubious pleasure of going to Southport Sunshine House, which was one of the sunshine homes for blind babies. And I went there from three to six. And I started learning Braille there. I think I may have been about five, maybe, when we started. And I can remember learning some letters. And it wasn't terribly much. But then I went to Sheffield School from the age of 6 to 11. And I started learning Braille properly because I started in class two because I was six. I must have learnt some Braille because I can remember saying to the teacher, oh, well, I've done this before. And so I can remember I knew the letters and we were taught the letters and we used to have to sort them onto a sort of a cardboard sort of frame with slits in. The teacher would say, right, I want you to put these letters in the first row, etc. And so that helped acquaint me with the letters. And then learning, of course, what each letter stood for. And I remember always thinking Braille was interesting and I wanted to learn it. I was as keen to read it and I was equally keen to write it. And in those days, most people seemed to learn on the hand frame, the dreaded hand frame, which I found really slow. And when I started, the Stainsby was becoming to be seen as the thing to learn on. So that was what I did. So I was always quite slow on the hand frame, but I also found it tedious. Whereas the Stainsby I quite enjoyed, despite its clatteringness. It was quicker to write on, so that was much better.
Do you remember the Stainsby, Steve? Because I don't, actually. I sort of started my writing journey in Braille, if you like, on the Perkins.
So did I. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know the Stainsby now, don't get me wrong, but as a kid, I didn't remember it at all.
Yeah. No, I don't either. I definitely don't.
I'm glad we did, actually, knowing what the Stainsby is. I think the Stainsby's evil.
Better than a hand frame, Steve.
No, the hand frame's okay-ish. I could kind of just about get the hang of a hand frame. Also, the hand frame you can put in your pocket. You had a note taker you could carry around in your pocket.
But there were actually some serious accidents once or twice with people being hit over the head in a classroom as people were leaving with a Perkins under their arm going to another class as we got older.
Gosh.
Yeah, and, you know, accidentally bumping into somebody who was sitting at a desk and, you know, their head happened to be just at that height. Somebody had a Perkins. That happened a couple of times. But, yeah, the Perkins was a great tool. And do you both still have your Perkins machines?
Yeah, I do. I use it for writing a few Christmas cards.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
The obligatory Christmas cards on a Perkins.
Yes. And it sort of comes out every December.
Yeah. No, I use it more often. We make business cards. I've got Braille business cards. I put, you know, the sheets of sticky back labels.
Yes.
I put them back of a printed card so that it's inclusive. Because
it's a good idea.
That's nice. Yeah. Is going to stands and see, you know, exhibitions and trade shows. And when you ask for a Braille card, you get a piece of Braille paper that is folded, and that's your business card. And the dots squash like anything, you know.
Yeah.
So you put the card in your pocket, and by the time you got it home, you can't read it. So I decided we were going to do it on sticky back plastic and then stick it on the back of a regular card. And it strengthens the Braille. It keeps it. And we use the Perkins to do that.
I use mine. I use it for making the odd note, really. I used to use it for sort of shopping lists, but not so much anymore. But certainly it comes out. I've had my Perkins since 1968. I think my mum and dad paid about 14 quid for it. So, you know, that was quite a lot of money in those days. Some people, I think their authorities got them or they got a grant for their education authorities or whatever, but it's still going strong. But it leads me nicely on to what your views, both of you, are of today's technology with Braille. If I could ask you first, Steve, where do you think Braille has come and are you still using it?
Yeah, I love my ESIS 12, and that sounds daft because it's only 12 cells, but it fits in my pocket. So again, like the frame, it goes in my trouser pocket and I can take it around with me. It's quite big. It's quite big for a pocket, but it does go in a pocket. And I also have a case for it so you can wear it around your neck. And it's got a basic note taker in it. And whatever I put in, it comes out. So it doesn't have a translator or anything smart like that. It's just a note taker. And it's a bit like the modern day slate, if you like, for writing on. And that goes everywhere with me. So yeah, I use Braille a lot. And then of course I can connect it to my phone, so then I can read texts in Braille if I want to. And I do that with Android. And I'm one of these oddballs though, Jackie. I don't know if you want me to talk any more about this on this particular recording, but I'm one of those oddballs that was never keen on grade two.
Right, okay.
I grew up with grade two and I was fast at grade two, but then I adopted ASCII Braille, computer Braille, and I realized that if I wrote in ASCII computer Braille and translated it to, or, you know, just copied it to a computer, it would come out in print. I didn't have to back translate it with all the back translation errors that go with it and so on. So I'm kind of one of these oddballs who thinks that longhand Braille is the way to go.
It's probably fair to say, Steve, that you're in a minority.
Yeah, I think so.
I absolutely realise that. And I also realise that grade two saves a hell of a lot of space. But I've also seen some classic back translation errors.
Yes.
You know, in my business life now, it's a lot more work to try and work through these silly back translation errors than to write it in ASCII in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I'm very good at 8-dot Braille, you see. Not many people are.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and I've adopted 8-dot, so.
What about you, Paul? How do you feel about modern-day Braille? You're using it?
Yeah, I love Braille displays. I started off with the VersaBraille in 1985, which was a tape-based system for storing paperless Braille. And now I use a note taker and I love it. It's like my pen and paper without the paper. And it's so useful just for leisure things, but also in a work context, it's been really useful in terms of my career because I was involved in chairing meetings, managing a team, and being able to do that with being able to have an agenda in Braille and to be able to take notes whilst leading meetings was so important. Being able to retrieve information at the same time as other people were talking was so important because its speech would not be enough. And it leads me on to the other point, really, that I think in terms of employment possibilities for blind people, Braille is absolutely key to being able to be more flexible. Without it, I think people are likely to be much less flexible. If they have Braille skills and they're totally blind, that will give them such advantage because you can write fast, you can read fast, so you can be much more adaptable. And I'm very concerned about the way in which people talk now about Braille. Oh, it's not that important now because computers can speak.
Yeah.
That is not true.
Yeah, I was going to come on to that. What's your view of that, Steve? What do you think the future is for Braille?
I'm hoping that the future of Braille is going to be, you know, cheaper Braille displays. I mean, we've seen things like the Knut. And we've seen things like the Orbit Reader. Well, we haven't seen the Orbit Reader yet. I haven't anyway. But, you know, cheaper Braille displays that are coming down to £300-£500 type of thing.
Yeah, amen to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you can link them to modern phones, Android phones, iPhones. And so, therefore, your processor, if you like, is in your phone, which you tend to upgrade every couple of years type of thing. So I think that's a really good future in that respect. But I agree with Paul completely in the excuses that teachers make that you don't need Braille because your computer talks. Well, the problem is if you read something, you don't always check it for spelling. And unless you actually use a spell checker in Word or whatever, a simple example of that. One day, I mean, Angie and I were just talking, Angie, my wife and I were just talking, and she loves Braille as well. And one day she put the word love in a document with two L's and the speech pronounced it love.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have known about that mistake unless you'd gone through it with a spell check.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same opinion as you two about having Braille in the future for literacy, for employment prospects. There are just so many ways. I mean, imagine that you're on the phone to somebody, and the classic example for me is dictating a phone number to somebody or a web address or reading, you know, maybe your credit card number back to them or something like that when I was working and having to take people's orders. And, you know, you just can't do that in the same way with speech synthesizer. I just don't think there is anything as quick as having your hand on a Braille display and being able to read a phone number or dictate something back as quickly. You know, you've got to listen to the person on the phone and listen to the speech synthesis. For me, it just doesn't work. And I just say long live Braille.
I think that's absolutely right. People will be much less efficient. But also, Jackie, another thing as well is that people who just use speech, children, don't necessarily learn to spell.
No, they don't.
And if you're writing an application for a job and you can't spell, it may not matter as much these days, although I think it should. Because if you present something badly with poor spelling, people are going to think, oh, this person, well, they seem nice enough, but God, they can't spell for toffee.
Yeah,
they can't communicate properly.
I agree to a point, Paul, but Braille doesn't help much with that sometimes either, because how do you spell knowledge?
Yeah, okay, exactly.
I accept that.
Now, the problem with grade two, if you don't know grade one well, then, you know, you can't spell things like knowledge. And who the hell is putting an X for it? You know, grade two, that's my problem. Some illogical twit put the X for the word it. You know, these are my problems with grade two. So how do you spell knowledge?
K-N-O-W-L-E-D-G-E.
Indeed.
Yeah, there you go. But the point is, when we were young, we learned spelling and things like, you know, had spelling tests and all that. And
that's right.
I don't know that blind people that use speech, as you say, Paul, do it. And the other problem with blind people and speech, and you've seen them, I'm sure I've seen them. Have you heard someone get out their iPhone?
Oh, don't start about dictation.
Right. And they swipe through and they hear something and they miss it. So they swipe back again and then swipe forward again because they missed it the first time, you know. And so that, again, is a problem because you're not actually hearing it. You're just kind of skimming it, aren't you, all the time?
Yeah, I'm not sure that dictation is always the good thing to rely on either. I know some people have to for various reasons, but I have seen some atrocious spelling and totally wrong context. And I mean, somebody said to me the other day in a dictated message, it was meant to be hijacky, and it was actually hijacking. I thought that was priceless.
Hijacking. Yeah, well, the other one I've seen is somebody on the recycling list was selling an iPhone 4S and they spelled it F-O-R space S.
Right, okay.
And of course it was dictated, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't a 4 and S or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It just amuses me that people dictate, and because of it they spell so badly because they don't check it anyway.
Yeah. Or,
but also the thing is, with Braille displays of whatever type, you can read stuff and you can think, look at the spelling or the mistakes that you wouldn't pick up by speech.
It's very revealing, isn't it, about how bad some of it can be. Yeah. And we're not sitting here criticising people.
No, no.
We're just trying to make the point that, you know, Braille is just so valid and so relevant and so absolutely has to stay. Guys, we could sit and talk about this one. We could chew the cud for hours. It's a fascinating subject. And thank you both very much for coming on and talking to me about your feelings about Braille, your views and your recollections. It's an absolutely fascinating subject tonight, and I just hope that people have enjoyed this. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I was just going to say, Jackie, before we go, the other thing we didn't even touch on is formatting and presentation.
Absolutely.
Yes.
The formatting of a document in speech. I don't care what you say, unless you turn on indentation announcements and spacing and things like that, and you still got to map it in your head.
Yeah.
So again, you do need Braille if you're going to do visually presentable documents, you know.
You absolutely do. Yes. And you're absolutely right, both of you.
I'm afraid that's my last word on it, but I did want to get that one in.
It's important.
You're absolutely right. Thanks, guys.
Okay.